mouth, the silence extends to every corner of the room.
Ivy, please, tell me where Amber is. Is she at the Chrysanthemum Tea House now? What happened?
These aren't questions you should be concerning yourself with. Ivy takes the wet cloth from me.
How I wish I could see her eyes. But I will show you how to be the favorite. I'm staying in the room just down the main corridor. I will be with you during your initial beauty treatments to ensure all goes well. I will help you navigate the rules of working with the Queen and the Princess.
Ivy is all business, and I reluctantly accept that I'm not going to get any information about Amber. I'll have to find out about her some other way.
Why do you and the other big sisters wear veils now? You never did when we were at home.
Because it's protocol, and to signal to the world that our generation is over. She pulls one of the strings on the wall above the nightstand table, and a sleepy-eyed Bree appears.
Bree!
I hug her.
Congratulations, she whispers.
Are you happy to be back? I ask.
Yes,
she leans in.
And away from Madame Claire.
We laugh.
Breakfast!
Ivy barks at her. Bree slides out of my arms and scurries from the room.
Time to check the morning ledger.
Ivy walks to the main salon. Follow. She points to a board. Elizabeth Dubarry's cursive handwriting spells out the date. Day 262 of the Year of the God of Luck. There are no appointments listed. Moments later, wheeled carts arrive, chock-full of pastries, eggs cooked in every way, grilled meat, petit pancakes with sugar dust, and bowls of colourful fruit. Ivy doesn't touch the food, but I pick at it. We need to review a few rules for court life. Her words sound scripted and practiced. She clears her throat. You are not to pursue anything other than your purpose. You are a belle.
Can we talk about what happened first?
I ignore her earlier warning and switch seats to join her on the couch.
Why was Amber dismissed? I need to know.
You are to act as if you're an artist floating through this world. Your sole purpose is to beautify and transform the Gris. You are a belle.
I put my hand up, hoping she'll pause. Ivy, can we?
You are to sell your skills, the arcana, not your body. You are a belle. My anger rises as she ignores my questions. You exist inside a secret world of beauty. You were born full of color, like a moving work of art. The goddess of beauty has given you responsibility. You are not to reveal the inner workings of your arcana. You are a belle.
I touch her. Her whole body flinches and she stands.
You are to respect your sisters, both past and present. You must respect those who are guardians of your kind. You are a belle. You were cared for, and in return, you must care for Orleon, the land of rising beauty, and share your gifts. You are a belle. You must vow to return home and continue the belle line. These...
Just tell me what happened to my sister!
I shout. I don't care about these rules! These rules are to be adhered to and followed at all times. They have served your sisters and will serve you well, she says at last.
Well, they didn't help Amber, the greatest rule follower of us all.
A wall panel shifts forward and Elizabeth Dubarry walks out.
Why are you yelling this early?
What happened to Amber, Elizabeth? Where is she?
I stand to face her. Elizabeth flashes me the biggest grin I've ever seen. She presses a hand to her chest as if she's holding in the answer to my question.
Please.
She sighs like I'm bothering her, and it's an imposition for her to tell me. But I know she covets the attention.
Wouldn't you like to know?
This isn't a game, I snap.
But it is. And you've won.
The word won hits me, and my stomach churns with the implication of it.
I need to know if she's all right.
What would you do for me? Give me an extra beauty treatment?
I blink. Does she really want me to bribe her?
I need you to fix me, Camellia. Mother is making me earn my own Spintria now, just like everybody else, booking these appointments all day long.
She turns to the large mirror over the hearth and examines herself. Yes, I take her hand, and the shock of it softens her. Whatever you want. Our eyes meet in the mirror, and I can tell she relishes the information she holds over me.
Amber made one of Sophia's ladies. Translucent, she says. You could see every vein and organ and blood vessel inside her. It was disgusting.
And she gave Sophia a too small waist that violated the beauty law.
Then she covered another lady of honour. In feathers, like a parrot. They grew straight out of the woman's skin.
I gasp. She wouldn't do that, I protest.
I'm just telling you what I heard. Elizabeth smooths her eyebrows like we're merely discussing the weather.
You must have heard wrong. I pace in a circle.
I thought that too. Amber was always the boring one. My mother's pet. It all sounded outlandish. But it was like she changed, became a different person. More like you, less like her.
She inspects the breakfast cart. I wouldn't make someone see through.
Right, but you'd experiment.
She grins at me, then pops a strawberry in her mouth. The front doors open and the beauty minister is announced. She strides in, her hair fashioned into a tower made of blonde strands and blue flowers. She has to hold her head very still. Good morning, Camellia. Glad to see you're already up, she says. Good morning, Elizabeth. Attendants trail behind her, holding stacked towers of dress boxes. Her eyes flutter over Ivy as if she's a piece of furniture in the room. Please set out the peach dress for Lady Camellia. She ushers the attendants into the apartment's dressing salon. Dubarry is announced next. She rushes in like she's being chased.
Camellia!
She wraps me up into a frenzied hug. She smells like home. Bell roses and marzipan creme and the bayou. She leans close to my ear and whispers,
Now that Ambrosia has put us in a precarious position, you must fix it. You have to do what you're told. You have to be perfect.
She pushes my shoulders back and stares at me with panic in her eyes. Her words curl inside me and make my heart race.
Tell me you'll do what needs to be done, she demands.
Yes, Madame Dubarry. The beauty minister returns.
Anna, let's have her bathed and dressed, then make introductions before she has her tour.
Dubarry squeezes my shoulder. She paints on a grin and turns around to face the beauty minister.
Of course, Madame Minister, as you wish.
The beauty minister steers me to the apartment's dress salon. Ivy's chair is now empty.
Where did Ivy go?
No need for you to worry about her, little darling. Go on and change. The staff await you in the bathing chamber.
I've already washed up.
You can never be clean enough, pretty enough, or smart enough.
She pinches my chin and pats my back. Servants draw me a bath. I soak in the steaming tub and close my eyes. Today is my first full day as the favourite. This is everything I've ever wanted. I wait for the excitement to fill me up, but all I think about is Amber. Her long lashes fringed with tears, her red cheeks flushed with anger and upset, the sound she made when she fell that night. Where is she? What did she really do wrong? Is she all right? I dunk my head into the frothy water and try to let the warmth wash these thoughts all away. I wait until my lungs threaten to give out before surfacing.
Camellia, time to get dressed,
Bree calls from outside the bathing chamber door.
Yes, just a second.
I step out of the bath and onto a prickly object. The rug is covered with thorny dead roses. Shriveled petals leave a rotten scent throughout the room. How did these get here? An emerald green post balloon hovers in the corner. I grab a towel and wrap it around myself. I kick away the roses and make my way to the balloon. There's no house emblem or compass on the side of it. I snatch the dangling ribbons and fish out the card.
Dearest Camellia, congratulations on being named the favourite. I'm sure you deserve whatever comes your way now.
I think of Amber's desk next to mine in our lesson room at home. Her quill, inkpot, and handwriting ledgers. I think about the curling G's and C's she was so proud to mark on her pages and show DuBarry when we were little. In my mind, I see her clearly, sitting at a desk in her new room at the Chrysanthemum Tea House, writing this letter. I ball my hand into an angry fist, crumpling the note with it. I throw it into the tub and watch as the water eats away at the parchment, and the ink bleeds until it disintegrates into nothing.
Lady Camellia?
The door slides open.
Are you ready?
The servant looks at all the dead roses on the ground.
What happened in...
I'm fine. Everything is fine. I storm from the room. 18. Servants help me into a bustling day dress that is a creamy blur of whipped frosting and sweetened milk, sprinkled with gossamer ribbons. My wet hair is sectioned and combed through with a cinnamon-scented hair cream before being twisted up into a bell bun. I walk down the corridor to the main salon. Ivy steps inside from the solarium.
"Where did you go?"
I ask.
"You look lovely," she says.
"Someone put dead roses in the bathing chamber." Her nose crinkles. "Strange. Why would someone do that?"
"Is Amber still here? Please tell me the truth."
"She's been sent to replace you at the Chrysanthemum Tea House. Stop asking about her."
"Why?"
"It's time for you to focus. She's my sister. She's your competitor." She pivots and strides towards the main salon. I hurry after her. A young man kneels beside the beauty minister, head down, sword at his waist.
"Camellia, the Queen has assigned you a personal guard."
The beauty minister reaches out a hand to me.
"This is Remy Chevalier, son of Christophe Chevalier, and a member of the Minister of War's First Guard."
He stands, towering over us with broad shoulders and muscles that strain the seams of his uniform. The hard angles of his face have the deep richness of a black calla lily. His lips don't betray the faintest hint of a smile. Rather, they're frozen in a perpetual scowl. A scar hooks under his right eye like a crescent moon, and I wonder why he hasn't allowed a bell to erase it for him. Dark hair is cut closely to his scalp, with a single silver stripe down the very center, marking him as a soldier from the House of War. I nod at him. He doesn't look me in the eye, choosing to stare at some point above my head. "He's been trained to protect you. He is one of Orléans' finest soldiers. He graduated from the Royal Military Academy with the highest honors, first in his class. Rumor has it he's favored by the Minister of War himself and might succeed him one day. He helped put down the Silk Rebellion, commandeered his own men. Very decorated soldier at such a young age." He bows after the beauty minister's compliment, but still doesn't look at me. "And now he's here to look after me like I'm a baby," I say. "Don't you think it's a waste of his talents?" The beauty minister laughs and touches my shoulder as if I'm purposefully being funny. "You're a very important person. Only a talented soldier would be entrusted with your care." A muscle in Remy's jaw clenches. I wait for his expression to change. Nothing. "Now, Remy will accompany you everywhere you need to go,
and stand guard outside the Bell apartments at all times. Be sure to heed his instructions.
I hardly find that necessary, I start to say, but Ivy reaches forward to squeeze my hand.
The favorite is always given a proper guard, Camellia. It is tradition, and we are nothing without our beloved customs.
The minister snaps her fingers at a nearby servant. The girl leaps into action.
By all means, move slowly. It's not as if I have a packed schedule.
The woman rushes forward to drape a white mink coat around the minister, whose blue eyes burn into mine.
I'm not happy to be going through all of this for a second time, so please cooperate, will you?
Ivy will give you a palace tour.
She blows air kisses at me, then leaves.
Come on, Ivy says.
We walk into the corridor outside the Bell apartments. The beauty minister heads in the opposite direction with her entourage. I steal glances back at Remy. Irritation and annoyance knot in my stomach. I don't want a guard. I don't want another person telling me what to do.
Stop letting them know how you feel about things. No one cares, Ivy says.
Them?
You let everyone see you so easily. No one needs to know that you don't want a guard. Nobody wants to be followed around all day. Not even the Queen.
Her words feel like a scold.
I just don't...
You are now the kingdom's most important treasure. There are so many things you don't understand yet. But I will show you.
Remy's heavy footsteps clomp behind us. Morning lanterns drift through the halls, catching sunlight from long picture windows to carry through darker corridors.
You were in the north wing of the palace. The Bell apartments face the morning star, the eye of the goddess of beauty, Ivy says.
The hall outside the Bell apartments stretches like a great river I never want to stop floating on. Colorful portraits of the goddess of beauty in her various forms cover the walls. Smooth marble floors spread out beneath our feet. The light from jeweled chandelier lanterns dusts statues with beautiful silhouettes.
She leads me over a glittering walkway. Golden spindles curl into royal chrysanthemums. The palace floors below bustle with moving bodies. Balconies spill over with flowers, chatty men and women, and servants darting from one place to another.
Royal vendors push pastry carts that leave buttery and sugary scents in every corner.
Did you have a guard?
Yes, a soldier named Emily.
Where is she now?
Shipped off to the Spice Isles to protect the southern waters, now that I'm no longer such a valued asset, she says, then turns left.
We pass through a series of Imperial Guard checkpoints. Ivy salutes one of the sentries. He smiles at her.
They aren't so bad once you get to know them.
She moves beneath a golden archway.
This is the west wing of the palace. The residential homes of the royal family are here.
Guards line the walls like statues.
This is the hall of kings and queens.
She waves her hands at massive, gold-framed portraits of our many royals, from the very first ruler of Orléans, Queen Marjorie, all the way down to the current queen, Celeste. We turn right. Walls sparkle with golden plaques that showcase the imperial beauty laws.
This is the hall of law and justice.
We pass by thousands of plaques, each emblazoned with ornate script. Fingers and toes shall remain at a 10-digit count so as to preserve the goddess of beauty's favorite number. Bells shall add or subtract to meet this divine number. Breasts will be limited in size and shape, no larger than a snowmelon. Mimicry is strictly prohibited.
Dubarry had tested us on these laws until we could recite them on command.
The flock must always be guided, and the laws keep their bodies safe. They are not to be questioned. They maintain a sacred order, she'd said.
I stopped to read more. No man shall be taller than the sitting king. After coronation, royal monarchs must settle into one look to preserve the security and sanctity of the magnanimous throne.
Did you help pass the current beauty laws?
I graze my fingers across the cool metal and etched calligraphy. Ivy turns around. No, I wasn't consulted. I want to be part of it all. Why?
Why not? I say. I want to make the people of Orléans love themselves.
Ivy continues down the hall. You are here to make things beautiful, she says.
I know, I reply, but...
The princess's chambers are ahead, Ivy says. Servants move in and out of a set of doors carrying trays and baskets. The princess's emblem shines on the rich wood, a chrysanthemum blooming inside a jeweled putti crown. Several other ladies hover outside. The hall goes silent. Courtiers crowd on both sides of me. Ivy and I pass through the heavy silence like it's thick mud. Their faces are curious, and behind their smiles is a reminder. They all want something from me. I'm supposed to prepare you to serve Princess Sophia. I studied a lot about her, reading papers and beauty pamphlets, even the Tatlers. I stole them from Du Barry's mail chest. Ivy presses a finger to my mouth. Not a single word you've read could prepare you for the real thing. The doors open. A trumpet flourish sounds. The princess saunters into the hall. Her day dress is buttercup yellow and perfectly complements her new skin color, a dusky light brown, like warmed milk with cinnamon and nutmeg stirred into it. A swirl of red hair sits atop her head like a tiered dessert stand. Do you still do her beauty work? I ask. Yes, Ivy whispers while bowing.
I heard the new favourite was outside of my boudoir, the princess calls out.
I join Ivy in a deep bow all the way to the floor. I lift back up. The princess takes my hands and kisses both my cheeks. Your Highness, I say.
Call me Sophia.
She smells like honey and anise. A train of women cluster behind her. Newsies send navy story balloons over our heads to try to capture any tiny bit of our conversation. Sophia's eyes scan my face, staring intently like she means to memorize each part.
I like the way you look, she says, reaching out to touch my cheek. We will spend time together soon. I have so many questions.
An attendant approaches and bows before us.
Your Highness.
She turns to address him.
What is it?
The infirmary staff is ready, he says.
Take her,
Sophia orders before turning back to me.
Camellia, my mother's summoned me, and when the Queen calls,
she sighs,
I can't ignore her, as much as I might want to.
She touches my cheek again.
More soon. I'm very excited about you.
Her eyes flash with eagerness. Her procession of women and attendants and newsies trails her down the hall like an army of ants. The doors to her chambers reopen. Male attendants carry out a young woman on a stretcher. Her limbs flop like dying fish. Moans echo through the halls and scatter noisy women in a dozen directions.
What do you think happened to her?
I ask Ivy. She stiffens, and her gulp is so loud it almost echoes. Princess Sophia, she says. 19. An afternoon fireworks display explodes over the Royal Harbour to celebrate the princess's birthday. The popping and crackling sounds boom through the apartment. I watch from the balcony. Colourful lighting spiderwebs across the sky. Silver, white, and emerald green weave the most beautiful and terrifying exhibition to mark the hour of the princess's birth. The garden arcades and grounds are abuzz with movement as the palace prepares for the royal birthday party. A hopeful thought wells in my chest. My sisters will most likely be here for the party. It's an official kingdom-wide holiday. I prepare two urgent post balloons, one to Adel and one to Amber. Adel, is anything better? Will you be at the palace tonight? Please come. I need to see you. We need to talk. Love, Camille. Amber, What happened to you at the palace? There are rumours, but I don't believe them. I'm sorry. Please write me. I hope to see you at the palace tonight. Love, Camille. I wait for a pause in the fireworks to send the two palace official post balloons off the balcony. An air postman will check their compasses and sweep them to their destinations this afternoon. I just hope Amber will read the note and write me back, and maybe even come to the party tonight. I need to see her. I watch until their lilac forms disappear among the clouds. A violet dress and a matching mask of sunbird feathers arrives in the main salon. The princess's masked garden party starts in 2 hourglasses worth of time. I ring the bell near the Orleans tapestry.
Yes, my lady?
Brie asks. Where's Ivy?
Oh.
A heavy knock rattles the apartment door. She scurries to answer it. Remy's thick boots clomp against the wooden floors.
Lady Camelia.
His voice has a single, unaffected tone. The pitch of it booms in my chest like he's speaking into a voice trumpet. You can call me Camille, I say.
Lady Camelia,
he repeats without making eye contact. Lady Remy. He clears his throat and sighs.
I'm here to discuss the plan for this evening's festivities and review the protocol with you.
I sigh. But of course. He adjusts his uniform jacket.
When you go to the princess's chambers, I'll be stationed right outside. When you're in the gardens, I cannot allow you to venture more than 15 paces away from me. At dinner, I'll be posted behind you with the other guards.
He speaks as if I'm a child in need of a leash. And maybe I am.
Will you come to the commode with me too? Stand beside me while I use it?
I'll be outside the door.
It's a joke, I say. His eyes narrow.
There are risks at court.
The roses in the bathroom come to mind. Where's Ivy?
Her presence has not been requested, he says.
Well, I'd like her with me. He turns without another word and leaves. I bathe and get dressed, then return to the main salon. Remy reappears with Ivy. Will you come with me today? I ask. I wasn't invited. Why not? Camelia, my time is up. I bring no more value, other than to do beauty work until you're trusted to do so, and train you to replace me. The way she talks about herself reminds me of Du Barry discussing a worn-out pair of shoes. We learned that after our time is up at court or the tea-houses, we train the next generation for a month before returning home to La Maison Rouge to become maman and raise the next group of belles. Maman once said that it went so fast, she felt like she'd only been at court for a single turn of a teletrope. I disagree. I take her gloved hand. That seems to be a trend with you, she says. And if I could see her face, there might be a tiny smile playing across her lips. Will my sisters be here tonight? I ask. All official belles are invited.
Official? What does that mean?
Just what I said. Her ability to always use the fewest words infuriates me. She's like a locked door I can't pry open. The bell apartment doors swing forward. An attendant announces,
"The Royal Beauty Minister."
The beauty minister strides in. She wears a model ship inside her nest of hair. Camelia, the princess has requested your presence while she dresses for her party. This is a great opportunity to get to know her and to learn her preferences. Yes, Madam Minister. Sudden nerves make my hands quiver. This is the first time the princess has asked to see me. The beauty minister glances at Ivy.
What are you doing here?
Lady Camelia requested me, Ivy mumbles.
It seems highly unnecessary. You won't be able to attend. They won't have a place setting.
Ivy steps back. Ivy must come with me to the princess's boudoir, I say. I need her counsel. The beauty minister sighs. The favorite gets what the favorite wants. She leads Ivy, Remy, and me out of the apartments, on the long walk to the princess's chambers. But the trip feels shorter this time. Servants move in and out of the doors, carrying trays and baskets. Laughter escapes into the hall. Sounds like she's in a good mood. This bodes well for the day. The beauty minister checks her tiny pocket hourglass. Her toilette ritual is set to begin in just a moment. You're right on time.
You're not staying?
Panic crackles inside me. No, my dear, not today. You must bond with Princess Sophia. Soon you will be completing all the beauty work for the entire family. She knocks on the doors. Just be your charming self. And you have Ivy here to help, and Remy will be right outside. Not that he's any comfort, I whisper. Ivy thumps my arm. Remy glowers at me. Now, now, she says. That's not what he's trained for. A servant opens the massive set of doors. I squeeze my hands together to keep them from shaking, and hold my head high. The beauty minister steps inside. I follow with Ivy on my heels. The boudoir is a jeweled cass, all pink, cream and gold, with the scent of roses wafting through the air, and three crystal chandeliers. Jeweled beauty lanterns sail overhead, dusting the room with the perfect amount of light. Courtiers mill in and out of an adjacent tea salon, loitering until the ceremony begins. The details of a proper toilette ritual for a queen and princess took weeks and weeks of studying and endless days of exams from DuBarry. But the particulars of those lessons vanish from my memory as I soak in the enormity of this room. Alive with movement, teams of servants lug large sofas and toilette tables and gold-tiered stands of macarons and tarts. They arrange items on beautiful brocade cloths under the careful watch of a trio of well-dressed ladies. Lavish necklaces coil around their throats like collars, displaying their house emblems. Each emblem contains a chrysanthemum twisted inside the symbol of their high house to represent their relationship to the royal family. They turn their attention to us. A flush climbs up my entire body. They whisper behind fans and glance at me. I tell my heart to slow down. At the back of the room, a large screen is hooked around the silhouette of a clawfoot bathtub. A waist-high barrier isolates it from the rest of the space. "Your Highness," the beauty minister calls out.
"Yes, Madame Minister,"
the princess's voice echoes.
"I have the new favorite, Lady Camelia Beauregard, here."
She pulls me in front of her and drums her red-polished nails on my shoulders.
"And the rest of the noble crowd eagerly waits outside your doors."
Water sloshes as the princess climbs from the tub. Servants rush to her. The screen is removed. Flushed pink and tangled in a web of towels, she's dressed in a bathing gown and doesn't look like the imperial princess, heir to the House of Orléans. She looks more like a little girl ready to play dress-up. Her appearance is different again. Pale white as a snowflake, her hair almost a mirroring shade, and bright blue eyes. She smiles sweetly at me. I relax a little. Everything will be fine. The princess waves me forward. I lean over the barriers and she kisses both my cheeks, leaving a warm wetness behind.
So nice to see you again.
I bow all the way to the floor.
Happy birthday, Your Highness.
Thank you, she says.
The beauty minister clears her throat. I will leave you here, Camelia, to get acquainted and witness the toilette ritual that only befits a princess and future queen. I'll see you later this evening for the royal games and banquet. The boudoir doors open. The beauty minister disappears, and a swarm of women floods inside. I study them. Most are princesses from the royal family, nieces of the king and queen, and a few girls and women from high houses. When courtiers receive their appointments, their portraits fill every newspaper and beauty pamphlet. The monarchs shower favored families with land, titles, gifts, and notoriety. Pay close attention, Ivy whispers to me before slinking backwards into the growing pack of onlookers. The women organize themselves by rank and wait patiently for their roles to begin. A few men squeeze into the group. A massive vanity is carried into the center of the room. Large mirrors reflect the beauty lantern light. Enameled casses expose glistening bell products, crested with rich, sparkling bell emblems. Glass canisters hold colorful liquids. Golden pins poke out of a pink velvet cushion. Carts hold tiers of pastries frosted in rose petal pinks and pearly whites and apple reds. Flutes overflow with jewel-tone liquids, and sugar-dusted strawberries and pomegranates sit in glass bowls. Vases spill over with flowers in a rainbow of colours. Sophia is led to a cushioned seat before the vanity. The towel on her head writhes. Out pops a teacup monkey.
"Singe!" she cries out. "How'd you get in there?"
The tiny monkey jumps from table to table as servants attempt to catch him. The ladies of honour screech until he's safely returned to his small golden cage.
"Why must you have that creature with us in the boudoir?" one of her ladies says. "Singe has a mind of his own," Sophia replies.
"The femme de chambre," an attendant calls out. A petite woman steps forward with an open book in her shaky hands. Sophia gazes down into the pages of wardrobe choices. She plucks a sparkly pin from the cushion and pushes it into the pages. She does this 3 times. The group of women ooh and ah at her selections. A maid shuffles in with a screen. Sophia steps behind it and disrobes, dropping the wet bathing chemise to the floor. Servants bring in her garden dress, parading it in front of the onlookers who fawn over it. The attendant steps forward. "Lady Gabrielle, Princess Jusang, and First Lady of Honour to Her Royal Highness, please step forward." Sophia's dress is handed to Lady Gabrielle, who ducks behind the screen.
"Camelia, my ladies will introduce themselves, won't you girls?" Sophia calls out.
Lady Gabrielle steps into view once more. Her eyes are bright, her skin the colour of the warm fudge my sisters and I used to steal from the kitchen.
"I am Lady Gabrielle Lombard, a Princess Jusang from the House of Orléans. Her favourite cousin."
She throws the room a smile.
"I am the Superintendent and First Lady of Honour. I call myself Lady of All Things."
"A pleasure to meet you, my lady," I say as I curtsy. From lessons on royal society, I know Gabrielle advises the princess and oversees the other ladies.
"Seeing you up close, you really are quite beautiful. The papers were right for once."
Gabrielle stares me up and down.
"Most belles are incredibly boring. Like the last one. What was her name again?"
"Her name was Ambrosia," I say. The words sound too hard, too protective. Gabrielle recoils like I've poked her. "We call her Amber," I add to soften it.
"Yes, Amber. Dull as plain vanilla," Gabrielle smirks. "You look like you might be entertaining."
I can't tell whether she's paying me a compliment or an insult. I stutter out a thank you. The next Lady of Honour doesn't move from her spot, sprawled across one of the sofas. She barely turns to look at me, too busy pushing a strawberry creme tart into her mouth.
"I'm Lady Claudine, Duchesse de Bisset," she grunts out and waves a hand in the air.
"Mind your manners," Gabrielle snaps.
She flashes Gabrielle a smile full of food bits.
"And Lady of the Dresses, though I haven't been helping the Fashion Minister with Her Royal Highness's wardrobe lately."
Her hair is a frizzy nest haloing her plump white face. "My lady," I say with another curtsy.
"Don't mind her, she's just grieving the loss of her last marriage prospect," Gabrielle teases, "though she might never get another one if she doesn't stop eating."
Claudine shoves 2 tarts in her mouth and licks her fingers loudly to make Gabrielle and the princess both cringe, as well as all the other people in the room.
"I'll just have one of her people,"
she points a sticky finger in my direction.
fix me right up. Slim me down even smaller next time, so I have more room to grow.
Or we could just make curves a trend again. You have a beautiful shape, I say. More women should covet your natural template. Claudine winks at me.
I'd still like to see how small I could be.
Sophia steps out from behind the screen. The dress hugs her frame. A tornado of tulle and lace in emerald, turquoise, plum, cobalt, and gold. A mask of peacock feathers is fitted over her face. Everyone applauds and whistles and shouts out compliments. I join in. She waves her hand and the room goes silent.
Claudine, you know my mother has outlawed deep body restructuring, Sophia says. Being too skinny is forbidden.
But we all know you'll change that when you're queen, Claudine says, a satisfied smile spreading across her face.
Sophia's eyes narrow. A strange energy seeps through the room. No one speaks up until the last Lady of Honor pokes her head out from behind a high-backed chair. She's the youngest one, barely older than a little girl, Holly, from the carnival night. She curtsies. Her dress is reminiscent of a bluebell flower.
I'm Lady Henrietta Maria.
She strokes the curls poking out of her long, dark braid and tucks a book into her dress sash. Her eyes glaze over with indifference. She's all freckled and reminds me of a caramel drop cookie. She gestures toward a puffy chair in the nearby corner for me to sit on, before retreating back to her place near the window.
I'm in charge of nothing. That's not true, Henrietta Maria. You are my beloved. Come here.
Sophia reaches her arms out. Henrietta Maria scurries over to her. Sophia plants a kiss on her forehead.
Now remember what I told you last week. You're going to be the Lady of the Jewels.
Henrietta Maria's hazel eyes light up.
Oh, right. I forgot. Go fetch the jewelry boxes.
The little girl skips off.
Camellia,
Sophia says, turning to me.
I love my ladies and court so much. They've been so supportive and loyal. I like to reward those who are good to me.
Henrietta Maria returns, pushing a cushioned cart covered with tiered jewelry stands, each dripping with bracelets, earrings, and necklaces. The gems twinkle under the beauty lanterns. Sophia's court ladies remove their own jewelry. Servants mill around, collecting the pieces in velveteen boxes. The women clasp their hands in anticipation.
Pick something new, Sophia says.
The women rush forward, swarming over the jewelry cart and fussing over who will get which piece. Gabrielle orders them around.
Your Highness is too kind, one says.
So magnanimous, says another.
Camellia, would you like a necklace?
Sophia asks. You are too gracious, Your Highness. I couldn't accept, I say.
You can, and you will.
She has the cart brought closer to us.
Pick one.
My fingers glide over the glistening pieces, as if they're petit cakes ready for tasting. I choose a necklace with a cherry-sized ruby. She helps drape it round my neck. The clasp pinches so hard it feels like the prick of a needle. I flinch.
Sorry, favourite. My jewellery has a tendency to bite.
Her ladies of honour chuckle and swap glances.
Out, Sophia says to the crowd. Please leave me, now that you've gotten your gifts. I want a little privacy. It is my birthday, after all.
Your makeup is not done, Your Highness, the attendant replies.
Camellia will tell me if it's beautiful. I do not need all of your opinions today.
She shoos everyone except her ladies and a handful of servants from the room. They grumble as they file out.
You too, Ivy.
I'm not ready for her to leave me here yet, but she exits with the group. After the doors shut, the girls resume their conversation.
You know Patrice is bringing her new lady tonight?
Gabrielle reports to Claudine, who grunts in response.
I hear she's a wonderful singer.
Sophia makes a chirping sound. Gabrielle bursts with laughter.
Are you ready to see her with someone new?
Gabrielle asks.
Well, I have to be, don't I?
Claudine snaps. Gabrielle plucks the tart from her hands and they fuss back and forth until Claudine orders the servant to bring her another.
I'm grieving. Just let me be.
You'll embarrass the crown. You're already embarrassing all of us in front of the bell,
Gabrielle says.
It's Camellia, I remind her, or Camille, which I prefer.
She jumps back like I've hit her. Claudine grins at her.
Forgetting names already, Superintendent Gabrielle?
I don't forget anything.
Her eyes hold annoyance. Sweat slicks my neck. Little quivers pulse through my hands. I hold my dress skirt and don't break eye contact until she looks back at Claudine. Gabrielle orders the servants around, telling them how the princess will wear her hair for the evening. Three single plaits twisted into a low bun, and she tells the other ladies of honor how to drape her with jewelry. Her slender brown arms wave about like wings as she doles out every command. A body-length mirror is set before Sophia. She turns around and around, then slaps her hands against her legs.
I hate this look!
Her ladies of honor spring into action. They fuss over her like it's a competition to tell her how beautiful she is. Even the little one lingers at the edge, holding swan's down puffs, ready to spray Sophia with a perfume atomizer. Sophia's maids glue extra feathers onto the gown, creating trailing folds like a peacock's tail. They sew sparkling charms along the sleeves. A diadem is placed in her hair.
I need to be the most beautiful girl at my party.
Of course you will be, Gabrielle says.
Why would you think otherwise? Claudine adds.
Henrietta Maria, tell them to bring out the beauty boards,
Sophia orders. Henrietta Maria skips all the way to the door, then disappears into an adjacent room. When she returns, she's trailed by a team of servants holding canvas boards and easels.
Camille!
Sophia barks. I leap up from my chair.
What do you think of these? I had my beauty cabinet make them up, and my mother continues to meddle and edit them.
I circle the boards. They feature different looks, nose shapes, hair and eye colors, facial structures, hair textures, body shapes and skin tones, matched with fabric swatches and rouge stick smudges and nail lacquer. They're lovely, I say, and boring. Sophia rushes up to me so fast I take a step back. She cups my hand in hers.
I don't want to just be beautiful. I want to be the most beautiful.
She doesn't blink, and her eyes stretch open so wide, it's as if she's trying to take me completely in.
I need to make the beauty scopes this week. It's my birthday.
I've never seen her in the scopes. Not once. It's as if the newsies purposefully ignore her. But her sister Charlotte used to frequent them until she became ill.
I have a secret for you,
she tells me. She leans close to my ear. Her bottom lip grazes it.
I wanted you. My mother wanted your sister.
Her words burn all the way down my neck and into my chest, like a scalding hot tear.
Your sister couldn't give me what I want, but I know you can. I knew from the night of the Beauté Carnival.
She pulls back and stares at me again. I feel frozen in place, like a butterfly pinned under a glass frame. I open my mouth to ask her what really happened with Amber, but a chime sounds. An attendant approaches.
Your Highness, your party will begin momentarily. It's time to go to the gardens.
She puts her hand up.
One moment.
She turns back to me, touching my cheek.
Give me a type of hair no one has ever seen before.
Her challenge thuds in my stomach. Sweat creeps along my brow and my cheeks flush. Shouldn't we wait for our first official beauty appointment together?
No, I want this now, Camellia. Before my party.
I have a feeling my parents are going to introduce me to suitors tonight. Everyone's gossiping about it.
She bats her eyes at me. Her teacup monkey, Singe, starts to stamp his feet and reach his paw through the cage bars.
See, Singe agrees.
My stomach knots with worries.
Ivy hasn't taught me what the princess likes yet.
The word no bubbles up on my tongue. I think of Amber. I think of all I did to get here. I think of how much I wanted to be the favorite.
Let's see if I was right about you, Sophia says,
and the challenge and threat are clear in her eyes. I'll need my beauty cast, Your Highness, I say.
Gabrielle,
Sophia says. Gabrielle releases a deep sigh, then slides off her chaise and leaves the chamber. Sophia sits at her massive vanity. Jeweled beauty lanterns cluster overhead. I remove the diadem and set it in front of her. I undo her low bun and unbraid her three single plaits. Hair bounces around her face like a soft cloud of white blonde curls. I run my fingers through it. I feel her eyes watching my every move. I think about all the pictures I've seen of her. She always leans toward shades of honey and gold. Should I have Belle Rose tea brought out to you? I ask.
No, I'm trying to go without it. I like to be alert for small changes.
Gabrielle returns with Bree, who tows my beauty cass. She winks at me and I smile. Bree works quickly to unhook the hundreds of clasps and fan open the compartments. I run my fingers over hair paste pots, letting the tiny clinking melody of their lids soothe my fears. I pluck a sunflower yellow and a silvery white from the tray. Bree, will you dust her, please? I ask, trying to buy myself more time to make a decision.
Yes, my lady.
She takes a bay powder bundle from a drawer and sprinkles it over Sophia's hair and scalp. The latest hair trends are adding coloured highlights, or mixing hair colours like black and red. I can't do any of those. They've been plastered all over the pamphlets. I look up into the skylight windows. The sun bleeds across the sky, leaving a garish trail of reds and oranges and yellows. An idea zips through me. I use a brush to paint the roots of Sophia's hair with the golden colour. It drips like honey down the length of her strands. I dip the ends of her hair into the silvery pot of colour and spread the colour upward toward the middle. Sophia grins at me. She takes a deep breath and closes her eyes. The arcana wakes up inside me. I tug at the strands of hair and they fall down to her waist. I twirl one around my finger to put a loose wave in her hair. The golden colour fades into silver halfway to the bottom. Her face is red and sweaty, and she pants. "Your Highness, are you all right?" I ask. "Would you like tea after all?"
"No, no,"
she waves a hand in the air.
"Continue. I'm fine."
I remove pots of ground graphite from my beauty cass and embed the flakes in the shafts of hair, so now the strands almost shimmer. Her breathing quickens. "I'm finished, Your Highness." Sophia opens her eyes and gazes into the mirror. A smile overtakes her face. Gabrielle's mouth hangs open. Henrietta Maria drops her book. Claudine freezes, pastry hovering right at her lips.
"I've never seen,"
Sophia starts to say, but stops to stand and admire herself. She twirls and lets her hair bloom all around her, then leans over to kiss my cheek. I jump back in surprise. Claudine, Gabrielle, and Henrietta Maria rush forward. I fill with satisfaction. "Let me also adjust your makeup to match."
"You can change someone's makeup?" Gabrielle asks.
"Well, I'm not supposed to, but I don't think any of you will tell Madame du Barry." I wink, trying to get them to laugh. They simply stare at me with eager eyes and pursed lips. I pull the head off a nearby rose. I stick it inside the soft belly of a cake of blush creme on her vanity. The colour drains from the rose as I add deeper red and white pigments to the makeup. I watch and wait for their reactions. The girls applaud my tiny beauty enhancement.
Splendid! How clever! That was beautiful!
I add the new powder to Princess Sophia's cheeks with a brush. When I am done, her eyes shimmer with delight. May you always find beauty, Your Highness, I say. The royal attendant returns to escort us to the gardens. Sophia slips her hand in mine.
We're going to be the closest of friends, she whispers. I just know it.
20. Marble stairs lead down into the palace garden for Sophia's birthday game. Lady courtiers hand out beautiful masks. Party guests trample ahead, fixing the masks to their faces, each determined to be the first to win the treasure hunt. Sophia and her ladies stop to pose for portraits and talk to newsies. Young men and women mingle, eager to enter the labyrinth of hedges and begin the game. I like watching how the people smile, touch, and laugh with one another. Garden lanterns linger above the giant geometric hedges, and blimps carry small bundles, gliding along the intricate maze. I put on my mask. The sunbird feathers protrude over my hair like ram horns. I gather up my dress and skip along. I need to find my sisters. I need to find Amber.
Stay close, Remy says.
No. I duck into the nearest lane. He grabs for my arm, but I slip out of reach. I like how his face twists with annoyance and his eyes flash with irritation. It's the most emotion I've seen from him.
This is not a time to play, he grumbles. Your safety.
But it is the perfect time. It's a game. I head for the thickest pocket of people as Remy struggles to politely navigate through the crowd. He's big and broad and unable to slip through the small gaps in the crowd like I can. I make aimless turns until I can't see him anymore. Dark garden passages fill with revelers and laughter. I join them. I ignore the dangers of being separated from my guard. I ignore the fact that Maman and Dubarry would be upset with me for breaking protocol. I imagine my sisters by my side. Adel tasting the various treats offered in each pavilion and congratulating me on continuing to break the rules. Padma, collecting every interesting flower she comes across. Hannah talking to all the boys and interviewing the girls about falling in love. Valerie dancing and singing until our ears can't handle it any longer. And Amber and I finding corners to whisper in. I'd ask her what had happened. I'd apologize for our fight. Once I feel that I've thoroughly lost Remy, I break from the crowd, heading in the opposite direction. Cool air finds its way into the fur bolero draped over my shoulders, and I squeeze it tightly closed. The promise of snowy months feels closer. I run my hands over orange and yellow leaves. They remind me of the color of Amber's hair, and little girl memories of weaving flower petals into each other's braids. Twin feelings of anger and sadness flush through me. I meander through the passages, turning left and right, right and left. Statues stand at sharp corners, and fountains spray rainbow-coloured water in the air. Laughing ladies stream past with gentlemen trailing behind them. They smile and point at me, and whisper my name alongside the words favourite and belle and beauty. Even with the mask, they recognize me. Jeweled pavilions and gazebos dot garden lanes, serving different teas, coffees, and sweets. Music floats out of some, giggles burst from others, and the scent of sweet pastries mingles with the nectar of flowers. I scan pockets of people looking for bell buns. The sun sinks fully below the horizon. The night lanterns are lit. I trample over a wooden bridge that crosses a small garden river, an offshoot of the Golden Palace River that runs the perimeter of the palace grounds. I make another turn and spot Sophia's dress. The jewels and feathers glow like fluorescent insects in the darkness, and her brilliant hair sparkles under the lanterns.
I crane my neck to see around the hedge.
She's wrapped in the arms of a young man, legs, arms, and lips locked together. Their masks lie on the ground. The green trim of his jacket reveals he's from the mercantile House of Clothiers, and as such,